Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC present Tri-State Viewpoint. To join the program, call 304-399-8255 or toll free at 877-420-8255. Now, from the Kindred Capital Building in Huntington, Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, and we've got a good program for you. You may have heard or even have seen the story about the fact that Marshall is looking at its 2014 budget and expected budget cuts. Why am I mentioning that? That's because our first guest will be Dr. Mary Beth Bella, and she is very much involved in this, and we want to ask her all about that. And at the end of the program, we'll tell you all the different things that are coming up this weekend. And my goodness, there's a lot of different things coming up, Bobby.
Oh, yeah, there's always something going on in Tri-State. A lot of people wearing black today, but other than that, we're in good shape. But anyway, let's get to the guest. Dr. Bella is, can we call her a regular? She's on every Friday.
Oh, she's definitely a regular,
yes. A very busy schedule. She's chair of the Department of Political Science at Marshall. She's involved in a whole number of committees there. But Dr. Beller, you took on a new assignment this week regarding Marshall's budget and dealing with the legislature and funding. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the university has been working very hard. This is a combined effort between President Coppin's administration and the faculty. Yesterday, the Faculty Senate approved a resolution. We're going to hold a series of fora here at the university, both on our Huntington campus as well as the South Charleston and Point Pleasant Mid-Ohio Valley campuses.
Dr. Bell, this is the State University of West Virginia, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's the University of West Virginia.
That's right. That's right. But what we're trying to do is to ask our members of the community, hopefully Bobby, you and Jane can both come join us, any friends of the university who want to talk with our legislators about the importance of higher education on economic development in this state. You know, the legislature is having a very difficult time with revenues, and we all understand that. But last year, of the budget cut that was passed, higher education took 40% of that cut. And that's an enormous amount. And Governor Tomlin has proposed another cut to be of the same amount for this year. And our position is that if we're really interested in economic development in the state, we've got to educate our citizens. All of the literature indicates in any field that businesses need people who are trained to write, to communicate, to analyze, and the jobs of today require an education. And so we really believe that further cuts to higher education are really going to work to further stagnate our economy in the state.
Dr. Beller, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the education expenditures take up most of the state budget, which means that when they start cutting, they almost automatically get a little more into education because that's the biggest area of debate. But there's no question about it that it's tied to economics and job improvement, so it should have a special category, but it's going to take another hit.
If I may, I'd like to issue a slight correction on what you said, Bobby, because the Constitution... Sorry.
Bobby just fainted.
water.
Well, the Constitution in the state of West Virginia mandates that the legislature fund education K through 12.
Right.
So the funding of higher education is not mandated, and therefore when we're looking at budget cuts, you're right, higher education does take a significant part of that because it is not constitutionally required to be funded.
Now, Mayor Beth, could I ask you something here? You're the chairwoman of the Faculty Senate Legislative Affairs Committee. And
yes,
that has a good title, and obviously it's referring to state budget cuts, but I can't help but wonder if there's some tie-in to what happened back in the spring when the president swept all the accounts and everything. I mean, is this the series of meetings on budget cuts, is this an annual thing, or?
No, this is something that we are proposing right now. President Kopp's actions in the spring were done in part to try to get a complete assessment of what resources we had at the university because we knew we were facing a budget cut that amounted in the end to an 8.9% cut. And so the president was trying to assess resources to see, given this enormous cut, what kind of plans he could make to keep services going at the university. That's what was going on then. Since then, we have had that cut. The president has consolidated a lot of offices, done things so that services could be maintained at current levels and that students would not be impacted. But what's going on now is that over the summer, Governor Tomlin indicated that he wants all public agencies to have another 7.5% budget cut. If higher education has the same cut that it did last year, we've trimmed everything that can be trimmed. So now we're going to have to look at cutting services to students, possibly raising tuition again, doing things that are going to really hurt the quality that we deliver at Marshall University. And so these four that we are proposing, this is a one-time shot to bring community leaders out, business and government leaders, faculty, students, and parents to meet with legislators and to talk about the fact that, you know, what we're doing here is to really help economic development in the state, and we need to look at higher education as an economic development tool rather than something that can just be cut every time we're low on resources. That also means that we all need to work with our legislators to find creative ways to raise revenue in this state, because it's not just an issue of the legislature trying to pick on higher education. None of us think that's happening. But rather, we do have a crisis of depleted revenues. We're looking at projections for the next fiscal year being even worse. And we need to find creative ways to make sure that we're not hurting economic development by tying the hands of higher education.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to ask, have the dates and times and the names of the various legislators who will be there, has that already been arranged?
Yes, it has, and I'll be happy to give it to you and to your listeners. All of these, there are three different fora, and they're taking place the first full week of November. The first is going to be held on the Point Pleasant campus. This is the Mid-Ohio Valley Center in Point Pleasant. It's going to take place on Monday, November the 4th at the Mid-Ohio Valley Center. All of these meetings take place at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
The second one is on our Huntington campus at the Drinko Library Atrium. This is on the third floor in the Drinko Library, and it takes place on Tuesday, November the 5th. And the third meeting takes place at our South Charleston campus, and that's going to be on Thursday, November the 7th in the library on Angus Payton Drive in the South Charleston campus.
Okay, so there are three separate meetings then.
There are three separate meetings. We are asking our legislators to attend all of them, knowing that, you know, some legislators are more Kanawha County-centered, while others are more Cabell Wayne-centered or Jackson-Mason, Putnam County-centered. But we're inviting all legislators to come for a couple of reasons. The first is that, you know, Marshall University students come from every single area of this state. We affect every county in West Virginia, regardless of which campus our students are attending. They come from all over, so we want all of our legislators to turn out to this. We think it's very important.
We're going to have to take a little break here,
okay.
Dr. Bella, and then let's continue our conversation. This is Tri-State
Thanks.
Viewpoint, and our guest today is Dr. Mary Beth Bella, who is the head of the political science department at Marshall University, and she is also the chairperson of the Faculty Senate Legislative Affairs Committee. And, of course, we're talking about the fact that there may be a sizable budget cut for Marshall. But we'll continue our conversation, and we'd love for you to join in with our conversation with Dr. Bella here at 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. Stay with us while we take a couple of minutes for some commercials, and then we'll be back with you here on Supertalk, 94.1 FM and AM 930.
This is Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint. Our guest is Dr. Mary Beth Beller, Chair of the Department of Political Science at Marshall University, a state university of West Virginia. Dr. Beller, I realize that there was a little problem last year when kind of Dr. Kopp kind of got ahead of himself trying to meet the cutbacks that were being made in higher education, but did he kind of learn any lesson of that? Is this committee kind of tied to that this year, that sometimes you can learn when you trip over yourself?
The Legislative Affairs Committee is a longstanding committee here at Marshall University, and our task is given to us by the Faculty Senate is to actually monitor the West Virginia legislature to keep up with proposals and bills and to track them through the legislative process and to notify the faculty of what's going on so that everybody's abreast of how the legislature is affecting higher education.
I got that. Is President Kopp going to be attending these meetings?
Absolutely. This is a joint effort, actually. The Legislative Affairs Committee has been working with President Kopp on this since August because we all felt that if we had a combined effort of the administration and faculty at Marshall and really worked together to have a big conversation with the legislature and to talk to them about the impact of this action,
so
we might be able to make a difference.
Yeah, Dr. Beller, then I can assume, we can assume that all is well again after the vote of no confidence in President Kopp. You all have gotten together, faculty, and you're all buddies and fuzzy.
It is. Well, we're very supportive of the president's efforts to raise money for this university, to try to help us deliver quality services. The president has been meeting with faculty in all of the colleges this semester and has formed a budgetary working group with administrators and faculty to try to tackle these issues together.
That's good to hear.
I know that you're hoping that your approach to the legislators will be successful. I think Bobby and I definitely both hope that it'll be successful and that you won't have to undergo a budget cut. But if you do, then how can the funds be made up? Is it going to mean a fee increase? I mean, this is just sort of passing the buck from the state to the students and their families.
And it is. And there are only really three avenues that we have to go. One is to increase tuition, which we frankly could not increase enough to make up for the proposed budget cut. It would cause an enormous amount of hardship for our students. The second avenue that we have is to try to engage in more fundraising with grants, with community efforts to help fund the university. And the third avenue that we have is to cut services. Those are really the only three options that we have. And I imagine that the university would not go in either one of those singular directions, but would rather have a combined approach to try to handle another budget cut.
I think it's a great idea to start these meetings and have Dr. Kopp there and hopefully a good representation of the legislators. But I also think that when you go into a problem like this, that it's very good to have an alternative solution to offer. And I'm wondering, in the discussions that have already taken place, I'm sure with your committee, is there any kind of suggestion that you can offer about the state budget? And I know that's a big deal to talk about the state budget, but any kind of suggestion you can make to the legislators as to how else they could make up the deficit?
Well, you know, President Kopp met with legislators last year and proposed that we look at a syntax on colas, on soft drinks, as a way to provide a revenue stream for higher education in a way that would not provide a penalty to citizens. And the president has asked everybody in Faculty Senate yesterday at that meeting, you know, to look for creative ways that we could recommend to the legislature that we could increase our revenue stream, perhaps looking at various tax loopholes that might be cut, or, as he proposed last year, you know, putting an additional tax on soft drinks, But yeah, we recognize that the money must come from somewhere. And so we're trying very hard to think of ways that this could be done in a less painful manner.
Yeah, Bobby, didn't we have a soft drink tax at one time? And yes. Is it not still in effect going to WVU?
We still have it, and it still goes to WVU.
Oh.
I had my little grocery store picketed for a week when I suggested we raise it a penny and have that penny come to Marshall. But Dr. Beller...
Well, yeah. they can't picket us because we're up on the second floor.
Yeah, hey, Dr. Beller, you know, next year's election year. Traditionally, yeah. Legislatures are loath to raise any taxes in election year, so yeah. You can do away with the soft drink tax, cigarette tax, and all that. Not only that, but you're going to definitely be hit with at least 7.5%, maybe higher, because they're $80 million behind already on their projections of income for
right.
the year we're in. So it's going to have to be done with some creative ways that you were talking about, because you're not going to get any help from the legislature, even though the chairman of the Senate Education Committee, who's also on the Senate Finance Committee, is our own senator down here, Bob Plannell.
Bob Plannell, yes.
Who's due, right. is due to come through with something big for the many years he's been up there. And the vice chair of the House Finance Committee, if I'm not mistaken, is Douglas Reynolds. So why can't these guys do a little more creative activity and represent the districts that elect them?
Well, we are certainly willing to work with them in any way that we can to help them in this endeavor. And we really believe we've heard great feedback from our representatives in the House and Senate to say that they do want to attend these fora and they do want to, you know, talk to us and come up with some sort of solution.
Well, now, what about any private fundraising? I mean, do we do very much? Is it all through the foundation? Or how does this work? Because it seems, as Bobby pointed out to me before we came on the air, that WVU does a whole lot of very successful fundraising.
They are very successful, and there is a difference in that WVU is a research one institution, and so as the state's largest university, its grasp is much larger than ours. However, Marshall University is engaged in a lot of very good fundraising. If you remember a few years ago, the legislature provided a Bucks for Brains grant and challenged the universities to meet their goals so that we could get matching funds. Marshall University was able to achieve that. And President Kopp is continually working to raise money for this university. It's just very difficult because we do operate on a significantly smaller scale than WVU does.
Yeah, Dr. Beller, I think one mm-hmm. way that you might want to look at this, even though you're not going to be able to get any taxes raised, there may be a possibility to either extend or increase the Bucks for Brains because it's tied to economics and education, and that can be some funds that can maybe drain a small amount from the Rainy Day Fund or one of the backup funds they have. That
right.
may be a thing that you can try to sell because trying to generate new revenue through taxes or other things is not going to happen, in my humble
at
opinion.
At all. Okay. it's a difficult proposition.
It is.
I know that.
But on the other hand, we stress tremendously in this state the need for higher education. Well, we stress education in general from kindergarten on up. It doesn't necessarily on those levels seem to be totally effective, but when you get to higher education, it seems to be very effective. And if we start cutting back on it, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Of course, there's a lot of things that don't make
well,
any
know,
sense
Jean,
to me. But
you know, Jean, Marshall is trying to reach a tier one, whatever it is, in athletics, and they had a fundraiser this
oh, that's
past
what
year,
we need.
this past year called the Vision Campaign, and they wanted to raise money to expand the athletic and upgrade facilities and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they got two of the Marshall grads, I think Chad Pennington and I forget who the other one is, to mm-hmm. be the co-chairs of that. And they're within the goal of meeting $30 million. That's why that soccer field is down. That's why the indoor track. Why can't we do that in the education arena or science or research? Can't we find some Nobel Prize winner from Marshall University to lead a campaign there, Dr. Beller?
We're searching. We're searching. And I will tell you, just to try to put this into perspective, there was a study done by Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce, and it analyzed in part of the study West Virginia mm-hmm. and indicated that by 2018, our state needs to produce an additional 20,000 college degrees just to sustain the current economy, not the future economy, but just the current. Right now, only 51% of West Virginians are able to look at that. Right now, a little over half of our jobs are requiring an associate's degree or higher. 27% have an associate's degree or higher, which means we're trying to import people in to take the current jobs. These projections indicate that just in a few short years, we're going to need 20,000 more. We've got to have an operating higher education system to meet this need.
Couldn't agree more. And everybody talks about that because we have slow job growth in the state primarily because we don't have some of the manufacturing entities.
Yeah.
And then we have people who want jobs who can't pass just a simple test, and there are drug problems. There's also education problems. And I think we still rank one state that has the lowest number average college graduates and high school graduates, although they have targeted the education thing now, Robin Davids and some of them, in terms of trying to deal with both drug and parental supervision to get their children to school, the dropout rate and all of that. It's a long list of things that need to be done. But you're right, Dr. Beller, we need these jobs, but the way to get at it is educate our workforce.
I've got a couple of questions for you, Dr. Bella, but obviously we're coming up to a break right now. So when we come back, and I'm glad you're going to stay with us. This is Tri-State Viewpoint with our guest, Dr. Mary Beth Bella from Marsh University. And, of course, when we come back, we'd love for you to join in our conversation. But we'll take a short break for news and commercials, and then we'll be right back with you. So please stay with us on WRVC.
You're listening to Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint with Bobby Nelson and Jane Dean. And we have Dr. Mary Beth Beller up at Marshall in her office. And we have Ernie Anderson looking at us and blinking. But Dr. Beller, I want to ask you a question. I understand that the school...
Annie just collapsed, Bobby. He must be tired today.
Yeah, all that drinking and boozing and running around will have its toll when you get to be 49 or 50 or 60 or 70. Hey, Dr. Beller, I understand that the School of Education started two new classes today at Marshall. Are you familiar with them?
I'm not. What are these, Bobby?
Well, one of them was a class called Defense. They want to teach the Marshall athletes what defense is all about. Actually, want them to know that there's actually a word called defense. And the other one, I believe, is called coaches. They want to help the coaches learn not only how to coach, but also that if you're a coach and the other team you're playing spies on you and knows what you're going to run, they're going to take you down, and they do that over and over. So hopefully these classes will be enlightening to our Marshall athletic people, especially me.
Maybe Marshall Athletics can give some money to the academic side.
That's right.
Hey, we know what to do with it.
That's right.
They just recently, as I said, had that $30 million thing, and they raised some money.
Right.
Maybe they can shift it over to the...
Yeah.
But I'm just teasing, Dr. Bellard. You know, I'm a big guy. I bleed green, but I just hate to see what happened like last night, Gene. Right at the very last play of the game.
I know. It was terrible.
I was up all night cussing and kicking and barking and biting. It didn't change anything. It's still 40, 50, 40 minutes.
Okay, I've got a question for Dr. Bellard. This is a serious question now. You mentioned that WVU is Tier 1 in research. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So is Marshall in any kind of a tier, and if so?
We are. We're considered a Tier 2 research school. And what that means is that the mission of the university is teaching as well as research, and that our faculty have a much more significant teaching load, which means that while we conduct research, we do have a much higher teaching mandate than does WVU. The WVU faculty have a much higher research mandate in proportion to their teaching mandate.
Well, forgive my ignorance, but why don't we change that?
We can. The problem is that it requires hiring much more faculty in order to teach the courses. For example, at Marshall University, faculty teach on average four courses a semester. At WVU, they tend to teach two courses one semester and three another. An additional difference is that we try very, very hard at Marshall University to make sure that most of our courses are taught by PhDs. At Research One universities, very typically all freshmen and some sophomore courses are taught by graduate students. I did this myself when I was a graduate student at the University of Kentucky. And while the grad students are trained to teach and they're certainly competent, they don't have the full background that a PhD can bring into the classroom. And so there's a significant difference, I believe, in the quality of the courses that can be offered, because by design, PhDs have broader backgrounds that they can, use to help get information to their students.
So are we lacking, then, in the number of professors who have PhDs?
No, we are not at all. In fact, for several years now, we have not even hired tenure-track faculty who did not have the PhD in hand. That's been a policy here at the university for a very long time. But the difference between a Research One and a Research Two institution is that a primary mission of a Research Two institution is teaching as well, teaching first and then research. But
okay.
Research is done and is required by the faculty. At a Research One university, faculty have a higher research expectation and in return teach fewer courses.
Yeah, it's just the reverse, Tier 1, Tier 2. Tier 1 is research is emphasized, Tier 2, teaching is... But Dr. Beller, the other university up north is also a land-grant university, which qualifies them for certain other monetary benefits, some research funds, federal money, automatic grants in certain areas. So they get a leg up because of the status. But I can tell you from experience, Gene, when I was at Marshall, we had wooden shacks and we had faculty. We had a few faculty. I mean, we had to strive. I'm not kidding. Remember the old military building? There was a barracks building there.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, I had my speech class. I got kicked out of that building one day because I said a cuss word. I said,
you're a bad, bad man.
But, Marshall is like the always struggling.
Yeah.
But they do a tremendous job over there with these departments all because they've always had to be like, they've been treated about like a second class. They used to lump Marshall in with all the colleges back then. And WVU was just, and they get special legislative treatment, just like the soft drink tax. So it's an ongoing thing to try. But given where we were 20 years ago and where we are today, it's a world of difference. And we keep climbing. We're getting to
the
top.
Well, that's true.
Except in sports.
Moving right along here, I have another question for you. I had referred earlier, Dr. Bella, to the fact that there was a bit of a furor back in the spring, and that seems to have been smoothed over, and everybody hopefully is happy. But I do recall that there were a number of very loud dissident voices at that time, and I'm wondering, in the meetings that you had, that is this going to be a dissential type of a topic? I mean, are we going to hear again from dissatisfied members of the faculty?
No, we are all working together to speak to legislators about the quality of the work that we do,
okay,
both as faculty and as administrators. This is not an internally divisive issue at all at the university. We all are very concerned that we be allowed to do a very good job and to deliver quality to our students. And with this budget cut that we're facing, our mission is truly threatened, that we may have to reduce some of the quality by way of cutting services, that we may have to charge higher fees to our students, which is going to hurt them. This is something that we're all united around to talk to our legislators about how we can avoid this.
Oh, well, that's good. I just wanted to really clarify that because it was a little disconcerting to hear some of the dissident voices back in the spring there. But I'm sure, that's all over and done with, and that's good.
Well, I think both the faculty and the president got a lesson from that, and they learned from it, which is a good thing. These meetings, I realize this has been a standing committee, but given more priority this year, and the fact that we're going to have these meetings and all, that is one of the things that you do now, and get the community more involved and have good communication. And that seems to be something that both, especially Dr. Kopp, I think, learned at that way.
Right.
It wasn't that it wasn't he didn't need to have it done. It's just the way he did it. But he
right,
but he did but he did apologize to his credit within 24 hours, and he put that money right back into the accounts. Right, Dr. Bader? He took arts and sciences, right? The liberal arts college, some fees there were taken, weren't they? And then put back, Dr. Beller?
Well, the process was that any fees that had not been encumbered were frozen, so that the president and the fiscal staff could get a good assessment of what resources we had that weren't already committed. Yes, all of those fees were returned. It was an unfortunate incident. However, you know, we were facing a budget cut without a good way to look at how we might be able to deal with that. And so trying to get a clear assessment was, I think, something that was needed, whether or not the process was a proper one. But please rest assured, the faculty and the administration are working hand in glove on this effort to have these legislative forums. We really think it's important that we bring out our community leaders and members in the community who understand how important economic development is in the state and how essential higher education is to that mission.
And Dr. Bella, earlier you gave us the locations and the dates that these meetings would be held. And, of course, they're open to everybody. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. I think it would be good, in case some of our listeners might have missed it, tell us again where the three meetings will be held.
The first meeting is going to take place on Monday, November 4th at 6 o'clock at the Mid-Ohio Valley Center. This is our Point Pleasant campus. The second meeting takes place on the Huntington campus, and that is on Tuesday, November the 5th, again at 6 o'clock, in our Drinko Library atrium. That's on the third floor of the Drinko Library. And our third meeting takes place on Thursday, November the 7th, at our South Charleston campus, and that's going to take place again at 6 o'clock in the library at the South Charleston campus.
Okay, well, I think that you certainly alerted us to a lot of very important information here, and I hope that in future weeks after you've had the meetings, you'll be able to tell us, of course, how they go. But before we let you go today, I want to draw your attention to a little story, and I told Bobby I wanted to do this because it is so ridiculous. I mean, I know that you, in your position, you obviously are a strong supporter of women in different career types and just in supportive of women in general. I'm sure I can assume that correctly, right?
You may assume that correctly, yes.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's not the same for women throughout the world. And I was reading a story today in the Herald Dispatch about Saudi women, where in...
Yes.
Did you happen to see that?
Yes. I am familiar with this, that the laws in Saudi Arabia do not prohibit women from driving. There is nothing on the books that does that. However... the form of Islam that is largely governed by the clerics in Saudi Arabia, those clerics have decreed that this is not a proper role for women. And since the clerics have so much influence on the Saudi government, it's the case that women really have not been allowed to drive, even though there's no law permitting it. And so a few years ago, there was a protest in which some women got together and drove. Penalties included the women being forced to give up various professions and jobs that they had. It was pretty bad, but there are a group of women now who are organizing again. These are women who are world travelers who go to other countries and get their driver's licenses there, so they know how to operate vehicles. But what they're doing again is staging another protest in which they're going to be driving around and, you know, making a statement that there is nothing wrong with women driving, and that especially in a country such as Saudi Arabia that does not have a very good, reliable public transportation system, that by prohibiting women from driving, you're really hurting their opportunities to work, to participate publicly, and that, you know, in 2013, we really cannot afford, even in Saudi Arabia, to have a country where women are not allowed to develop careers.
Well, the thing that really got me was at the, toward the end of the article that I was reading, it said that there was a very prominent cleric who last month, said that medical studies show that driving a car harms a woman's ovaries. Now, can you think of anything more ridiculous?
My ovaries managed to produce
three children, so...
I wonder what they'd do if they prohibited men from driving.
I don't want to even think about it, Bobby.
We have fewer accidents.
I'm not going to Saudi Arabia soon.
Well, you know, it's absurd the way that religious leaders of any stripe, you know, can twist religious doctrine to come out with these ludicrous statements.
Exactly.
And I certainly applaud the women who are willing to go out and to drive and to risk being arrested, to risk their jobs and careers. They're very brave.
They certainly are. And unfortunately, we're out of time here, but we certainly do thank you very, very much for joining us again. And please
thank
keep us updated. And watch out when you're driving a car.
I will do that.
And I still love you, Dr. Beller.
Thank you, Bobby.
All right, listeners, we're going to take a short commercial break, and then we're going to tell you about some of the things that are coming up this weekend. So please stay with us. This is Tri-State Viewpoint with your hosts, Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean. And we'll be back here on Supertalk 94.1 FM at AM 930.
Yes, welcome back. You're in the final segment of Tri-State Viewpoint. This is a time when we talk about events coming up over the weekend in the great Tri-State area. Gene?
Absolutely, yes. I have a good friend who tomorrow will be at the Hospice Gift Shop, and this is a great time to start your Christmas shopping. The Hospice Gift Shop is right there on 6th Avenue at 11th Street, and from 10 until 3 tomorrow at 1101 6th Avenue. Go and take a look at it, because they really have some unique gifts, and if you go between 12:30 and 3 tomorrow, say hello to my friend Pam Gruber, because she'll be there as one of the helpers, one of the volunteers. So let's try and get down there tomorrow, Bobby.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great. Well, also, it's a very important day tomorrow. It is Drug Take-Back Day. This is a national effort through the National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, and it will be here in the Huntington area or the region tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and there will be various law enforcement agencies and others to assist volunteers who will be accepting unneeded or expired drugs. And this is they want to get these people to get these drugs.
Where are you going to do that, Bobby?
There are several locations. Ebenezer Medical Outreach on 1448 10th Avenue in Huntington. The Milton Preschool over there at 1302 West Main Street in Milton. The West Virginia State Police Detachment right out here on U.S. 60. And also the CVS Pharmacy here in Huntington down on 5179 Route 60. And this is also occurring across the state in Putnam County.
Oh, different locations.
Yeah, you can go online, the National Drug. But it's been very successful. Booth Goodwin has been a big proponent of this. So that's going on here. And there are other events taking place.
Oh, yes. And there's one that is kind of, I think, rather unusual. It's not actually here in Huntington, but it's just a short distance away. A couple of years ago, I took my family up to the Stonewall Jackson Resort. And while we were there, we went to what was the former Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Western West Virginia, one of the scariest buildings I've ever been in. But anyway, they are having tomorrow night the Asylum Ball. They've got metal music, whatever, you know, whatever that is, and of course, costumes and prizes. And the costume categories include sexiest, scariest, best couple, group, superhero villain, and funniest. So if you want to know more about it, go online at theasylumwv.com. I think you might have fun there.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They promised to let you out afterwards.
I think Ernie's a graduate. I don't know about that. I would prefer to go up to Cabell Midland High School beginning tomorrow because it's the annual Diwali, one of the significant events of the Indian population in Huntington. They have their festival there. It's 4 days of prayer, music, everything, celebrating their culture, celebrating their... Mm-hmm. It's very fun to have. In addition, they have fashion shows because the Indians are known for their really
beautiful saris.
Yeah, so that starts really tomorrow night and goes through the weekend, 4 days. And each day is a certain one. The first day is a day of prayer and protection from death. Then you rest and relax for the second day. And then you have the traditional Indian food, fashion, music, and dancing. Mm. That will take place on Saturday, the third day. They have all this. Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then day four is the first day of their new year. Oh. And that's where they again do more prayer and they strengthen the bonds mm-hmm. of families and all. Mm-hmm. It's a nice event for the Indian population, but it isn't restricted to them. You can go out there. Also, I want to mention real fast.
Where is that, Bobby?
It's at Cabell Midland High School.
Okay.
And it starts on Saturday, the 26th.
Okay. Okay.
I also want to mention that the leaves are rapidly changing, and they're almost past their peak in certain parts of West Virginia. But if you go down around New River Gorge this weekend mm-hmm. or down toward Wayne County, out in mm-hmm. that area, you can catch them. But after that, in fact, up north, a lot of it's already
This is the weekend to see the leaves.
This is the weekend. Right. The train group that goes down. It went last week. They go in this week. Mm-hmm. According to Dave Lavender, who's the expert in all mm-hmm. this, the peak color is this week. It was nice last week when the train group
went.
This is the week to go.
Okay. And if you can't get away out of the tri-state area, remember that Camden Park is having its annual haunt. Mm-hmm. The Halloween Spooktacular. Nearly mm-hmm. said that wrong. Spooktacular. And also the Pumpkin House, of course, is open now. Yeah.
What is that? 3,000 pumpkins? 1,000? They light them all, and they get volunteers to light them. That is really... That's an amazing event.
It's a wonderful thing.
Well, they have a couple events in connection with that, too. Concessions. They have crafts and things.
Right.
And what is that famous restaurant in Cerrito, the Italian restaurant?
Rocco's.
And they have one of the famous Italian pizza places down there, Everoni's. Everoni's will make you a...
Eddie's going all Italian on us. He's
By the way, I will be making the music noon to 5 for their cruise in tomorrow at Cerrito Plaza there.
Oh, that's is that Senator Ted Cruz coming?
Have him cruise on down the river.
keep going, Ted.
Yeah, that's a very nice community, Gene. That's Cerrito and Canova. They're kind of connected,
uh-huh.
but there were big rivalries in schools.
And they had
to close a couple of schools because of dilapidated conditions, and now they want to put these two schools together in a new school. And you got a little community. And to do it, they have to pass the bond issue. Huh? Good luck there, Wayne County.
When I first came to live in Huntington, it was Cerrito hyphen Canova. Yeah. It was all one.
CK Wonders, the big class. It's a great community. A lot of good, strong, stable family groups in that area.
And a lot going on at the downtown public library, actually. Yeah, there's some mm-hmm. Halloween stories for the kids. Roger Hagley. He is a ghost hunter extraordinaire. So. Anyway, get out and do something. The weather is warming up and you can have a great weekend. We hope that we've alerted you to some of them. So, and here we are at the end of the week, but we'll be back on Monday, Bobby, and have more guests for you all next week. Thank you so much for listening to Tri-State Viewpoint here on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. And as always, we always wish that you'd make a note of our telephone numbers and give us a call in. Of course, it's too late to do it for today, but next week, jot down those numbers.
We didn't mention them today. You know what else we got through?
We got carried away, didn't we?
We got through a whole hour without a mention of Obamacare. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, my goodness. How did we do it? We'll catch up next week, Bobby. This has been Tri-State Viewpoint with Bobby Nelson and Gene Dean here on Supertalk 94.1 FM at AM 930.
The John Boy and Billy Big Show, morning 6 to 10 on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC Huntington.